Welcome to the best of the RSN Breakfast Club. Here's a little bit of what we did. Take a listen.
Adam White loves it too. He's in a different chair today. I wonder if it's a more comfortable chair for the great man. Whitey, good morning.
Good morning, Half Ram. It was interesting with Aaron Francis coming back.
It's nice to have him. Turn him off. Thanks, Craig.
Just,
we don't want
the one change.
Just going to shut him down there. Shut him down.
I do support Essendon. A bit flat about this this text message traffic coming
early. What have they said?
Well, some real sort of warmth for the fact that you're back.
Yeah.
Almost relief.
Well, it's not so much that I'm back.
But we did quite a good job the last couple of days.
It's that you guys talk too much Essendon, clearly.
Well, we didn't really.
That's clearly the theme that's come through. Thank goodness he's back. No more Essendon, says Gav, the greenskeeper. But thank the Lord, Bomber Radio. Over is the next one. Normality resumes, says Jack and Madonga. No more Bombers. Welcome back, Half, says Horry. No more Bombers. So you must have been, you must have gone over the top with your red and black.
We had Xavier Campbell on yesterday, and we took a break halfway through the interview because
I did notice that there was an
extended chat.
About 20 minutes, and the Bond got seven, did he? Is that what happened? That was disappointing.
I don't think the Bond got that much.
I think the Bond got 7 and Xavier got 20. Adam Romanaskis was probably the reason for that. Former Bombers champion, these days manager to the Stars. Good morning, Rammer. Are you responsible for this?
I may have had something to do with it.
We were brave.
Like Monday, it's simple.
Oh, God.
It's simple.
Half couldn't come in.
We don't talk to Sue.
We're brave.
The country is excited about the Bombers.
And we're getting criticised.
We don't talk about
the country them. Is excited no, about the Bombers.
No one's excited about the Bombers.
Dreamtime at the O this week.
It's not what it's called, mate.
What is it called?
Dreamtime in the West.
Oh, Dreamtime in the West. I was going with the O.
They're walking from the Wacker, did you know?
Yeah. So that's terrific. Look, in all seriousness, that's one of my favourite parts of the whole event of the Dreamtime game. Now, Longie being an ex-teammate of mine, I know how much time and effort and work he's put into that, and obviously the reason why he walked at the very beginning to Canberra. So they've got unprecedented numbers.
I forgot how it started. He did. He walked to Canberra,
yeah,
didn't he?
Yeah, he walked to Canberra. A few of us, we actually drove to where he was he was on the Hume somewhere, and we all stopped and got out of our cars and started walking with him.
Didn't he walk in like jeans and brown shoes?
Initially, yeah. So then a few people had to come and give proper shoes, and in the end he had a walking stick with him and all sorts of things. So
it's a long way to Canberra.
It's a long way. Thank God that the Prime Minister at the time
met him halfway, did he?
Well, he caught wind of it and said, look, get him in the car and get him here and let's have a conversation. So that's the part I'm rapt about. I'm rapt that that's still going ahead and Longie's going to Perth because there was a fair chance that he wasn't coming to Melbourne if the game was here because of obviously the COVID situation that we were facing. So he's over in Perth, I believe. I believe he spoke to the players and the football club yesterday. So he's one of the great men, of AFL football, Longie.
Hard to argue with that. But the feedback is still strong about Bombers Radio.
You're getting tweets.
Yeah, good to have Half back and put an end to Bombers Radio and Celine Dion rockouts, says Michael.
Well, I can't defend Whitey.
Well, what happened? I didn't listen to the rockout section.
It just simply didn't go with a rock song yesterday.
That's like, true. Rammer sang the song the whole way through. And
but
then
I sang the Guns N' Roses version.
What did you do? Which song did you go with?
Live and Let Die, Paul McCartney.
Paul McCartney?
Yeah. You had to go original.
You don't put the playlist on the R Care community aged care setting, do you? That's the sort of the tunes that they're rocking out to there. Not here on RSN 927, not here on The Breakfast Club.
It doesn't matter what you say to me. That was a great song.
Well, according to the traffic.
Yeah,
it was very popular.
According to the traffic.
That's not true.
There was no defending Whitey yesterday on that one.
Even your co-host.
No, that's being vindictive.
Look,
it's been...
No. I thought I was reasonably good on Wednesday with the Holy Grail.
He was bouncing around. He had drums going. He had all sorts of stuff going. He saying how much he enjoyed
it. You should have just went with the Guns N' Roses version.
No,
simple.
That's not the original.
It doesn't need to be the original. It's the rock out.
It's pretty simple. That's the feedback.
Anyway.
Right. Right. Now, Marcus Harris is not too far away, so I'm looking forward to catching up with him. John's on the road before we get there.
Ah,
Remo,
yeah, good bomber.
By.
He's a good bomber, John.
No, it's enough. It's enough. If he talks bombers, he's off. John, good morning.
G'day, fellas. How are you?
Going well.
Very, very disappointed with the state government for those who go to this match. I don't know, mate, if they can't even get this contact tracing and this footy, they're just ripping the heart out of our place. What are they doing, this government? Local footy? Really, you know, and then it's false positive from the Brighton things. Really, really disappointed. Thank God we got a bit of support, but very disappointed, mate, and I'm looking forward to beating Richmond because we haven't beaten them for a while.
Sounds like it's in a conversation here, John.
Just on the local footy, that is the hardest part because so many people look forward to their weekend sport. I know my kids definitely do. I know regional Victoria is some way going to be back this weekend. I know there's a couple of NAB League games that are going to go ahead. So for
is
the
there?
Elite competition, yeah, there is. So Geelong are going to play North Ballarat, so GWV Rebels, and Bendigo are going to play the Murray Bush Rangers.
So while the metro teams are locked down, the regional teams are playing.
Yeah, now whether they're for actual points on the ladder, I'm unsure, but just bear with me for a sec.
Just talk amongst yourselves.
Thank
you, John, by the way.
The Rebels versus Geelong Falcons, that will be at Mars Stadium in Ballarat, and Bendigo versus Murray Bush Rangers will be in Echuca on Sunday, that game is, and the Geelong game is Sunday also.
I know that this is more sort of Neil Mitchell areas, but it will be interesting to see whether things change based on the information that came through late yesterday about the fleeting
hub of infectious virus. Yeah. Yes, there's a few.
It probably won't
heads
change.
Being scratched, I think. I wouldn't think so.
It would be good if it did.
Yes, it would be very good. I don't think there'd be any grey area there. It would be very good if it was.
Now, Whitey, what happened with Ash Barty overnight?
Yeah, she's out.
Gone.
So, she didn't complete her second round match because she's got a hip injury.
Mm.
Now, the hip injury is something that had sort of flared up over the weekend before the tournament started. She was able to find a way to get through the first round, where she did lose a set. She lost the first set last night, or sort of even in the second, and it just got too much for her. So she's out. And the disappointment is obviously that it's a Grand Slam, and she's won that Grand Slam before. But also, looking ahead to Wimbledon, there's not much turnaround between the French and Wimbledon, so that would have to put her in doubt for Wimbledon as well. So she was fairly emotional after the match, as you'd expect. But she's gone. She's out of the tournament. And it was a horrendous day for the Australians because Alex Diminar got beaten as well. He's sort of 21, 22 seed, so that was seen as a little bit of a surprise. James Duckworth got beaten, and one of this young emerging players on the women's draw, Astra Sharma, she got beaten as well. So that was not a good day.
Is there any Aussies left?
I don't think there is, because Tom Lanovich got beaten yesterday. Duckworth got beaten last night in four, so that, I think that's it.
Andrew Illy didn't get through.
Andrew Illy, well, he's pretty good on the clay with that Romanian heritage.
Jason Stoltenberg.
Richard Fromberg had a good start.
Wally Masua.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's it. Brod Dyke, Johan Andersen.
Who is the sidekick? Mark Kratzman? Was there a Kratzman?
Mark Kratzman, yeah.
Mark Kratzman.
Blonde
Richard,
hair
with he was always in the Davis Cup squad, but never played.
Richard Fromberg. Hands. He was a...
Soft hands.
No, good hands. He was a double specialist.
Right, never played. Just wore the hat. Just wore the baggy green style Davis Cup hat. Speaking of baggy greens and good hands, Marcus Harris has got one of them and has a set of them. And he's the Australian opening batsman. And I'll tell you what, since he spoke to us last time, there's been an unbelievable turnaround.
Two first-class centuries.
A spike.
In form with his first-class cricket over for Leicestershire in the county cricket system. He joins us on the Breakfast Club. Good morning, Marcus.
Morning, how are you?
We're well, mate. You're going well. If you don't know, Whitey has been telling the whole world that he's responsible for your turnaround in form. Is there any truth to that?
I can let him claim that. I'm not sure what he's done, but he can claim it.
Oh, come on. We talked, you know. You've done well, though. Like, in all seriousness, two centuries in about three games, but batting at number three.
Yeah, it's been good. I think the good thing about county cricket is you play so much cricket. So I know this time last week we'd sort of come off the back of a tough game down in Southampton where we literally only played 80 overs for the game, but nearly got bowled out a couple of times. So that was a good challenge. But, you know, we've been able to play a few more games now. So, yeah, it's been good to spend some time in the middle.
So Marcus, why number three? Obviously, we look at the Australian Test team at the moment and looking where the opportunity sits with you. Number three probably isn't the position. So why are we batting at number three at the moment?
It literally only happened because when I got over here, the Leicester boys had a game at Surrey and the two boys that opened the batting that game both made 100. So I said to the coach, he asked me where I wanted to bat, and I said, I don't really care. So if you want those two guys to keep batting the batting, I'm more than happy to bat at three. So that's literally the only reason.
So does your attitude, does your technique, does your mindset change batting at number three rather than opening?
Oh, well, I think the good thing is, like, if you bowl a team out, you don't have to charge off the ground and whack your pads on, like, in a frantic rush like you would if you're opening the batting, and gives yourself just a little bit of time. So I've enjoyed that aspect of it. But to be fair, I've batted three, besides the first game, I've batted three every game. I've been in early anyway, so it hasn't really been too different to opening the batting. But like I've said to in a few things, I'm not that fussed now. As I get older, I'm more than happy to bat three or open. I'm just do whatever.
See, I've just actually realised you just made another 100 overnight. That's three.
Yeah, I got 100 today, yeah.
148.
Mm. Yeah.
Going all right.
That's three in a month. Is that now, Whitey? Clearly is an inspiration to you, and we understand all that. But is it just more time over there and just being a bit more comfortable in the conditions and the environment that leads to this sort of stuff, or you just seeing them like beach balls?
I think it's just getting a bit more used to the conditions. The wickets are very different here. I wouldn't say they're doctored, but the home team definitely favour the wickets into how they want them. So, like, for example, say, there was two big sand pits on a good length for a spinner. So but that's our home ground. So that's just the way you've got to work out a way how to combat that. And then, a couple of weeks ago down in Southampton against Hampshire, they had Kyle Abbott and Muhammad Abbas. So that thing had branches on it. So that's where it's just always different conditions. And, that's what's been good. And that's why I wanted to come and play county cricket, is because you get to play in different conditions and get used to different wickets. Like our wicket at Grace Road generally stays quite low, but can be a bit up and down, so it can be challenging to bat on until you sort of get used to the wicket a little bit. So it's been good to just experience different conditions and different, like, the climate's very different here, obviously, so, and that can make a big difference in just how the game plays out, if it's sunny or if it's cloudy. So it's been fun.
And does that make it a bit more palatable, a bit easier to go through day-to-day when you are the international pro and you are making runs? A bit less stressful?
Yeah, it's funny how cricket can change quickly. Like, I made that 100 against Surrey a couple of weeks ago, but then we had pretty much a game and a half washed out, and I hadn't really had too much of a hit, and I was going, I'm getting towards my fifth and sixth game. I haven't really done as much as what I'd like to, but then in my last two innings have been good, so you can turn around quite quickly. And yeah, as the overseas, you obviously have that bit of pressure on you to do well and to, you know, try and win, at least win a couple of games for the team. So it was good to do that on Sunday.
So obviously, Marcus, when you make 300s in about four games, you're spending plenty of time in the middle. There's been a lot of talk about, and we've spoken to you a lot about, the sort of the technique changes you've been working on over the last sort of 12 months or so. Now you're getting that time in the middle. Are you finding now that's all just sort of becoming second nature?
Yeah, it is. And then it's just even now, I'm still tweaking as I'm going now. So just with the way that the wickets have been, where we've been playing, you've got to look to get forward a lot. So, and you can't get stuck on the crease. You've got to sort of get out of the bowling a little bit. So that's been a challenge, but it's been good. It's been something I've been reluctant to do in the past, is sort of get out of my crease too far, especially in Australia, just because the ball bounces a bit more and stuff like that. So that's been good. I haven't changed anything too much here, just a few little things in my feet sometimes, but nothing drastic. But, yeah, just batting in the middle and getting, you know, rhythm and repetitiveness into my batting has been really good. So
yeah, absolutely.
Become like second nature.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, even overnight, you're in the fourth over, so it's not like you're coming in after 30 overs and you've got Dan Worrell, you know, bowling, you know, a fair bit of swing at you. So that you still, it is going to test your technique.
Yeah, Gloucester are actually top of our group, so they've been probably the best. They have been the best side, and they've probably got one of the best team attacks, definitely in our group. And you know, a good challenge for me is I've wanted to improve my play against spin a lot. And in the last couple of games, we faced a lot of spin, so that's been really good. I've been really happy with that. Just made a few little tweaks with that sort of stuff, just working with Paul Nixon, our coach, and just some little things you can do that can sort of help you a little bit. So that's been really good. And like I said, it's just been fun and enjoyable just to spend time in the middle and enjoy it for what it is.
So, Marcus, we've been watching the England-New Zealand game back here on TV. It's perfect time at night to watch it. And we sort of got half an eye on the Ashes to see how the England bowlers are going, particularly. We had Mark Wood bowling sort of early 150s repeatedly on day one. Do you watch it as well, thinking about what you might be facing next summer, or do you try and not look that far ahead?
Yeah, I did watch a little bit of it on Wednesday. Yeah, Mark Wood, GP, has a crack. He runs in a million miles an hour all day, and he looks like he can bowl pretty quick. I've never played against him, but I know he ruffled some feathers in the county games that he played, but obviously they're an experienced attack, the England side, so you obviously have a look at it. That wicket looked pretty good at Lords, to be fair, and all the county cricket has been going all over the shop and being green as. So.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think like you've seen with England in the last sort of 12 to 18 months, that they do chop and change their team a lot, so they've probably got six or seven blokes that can all play. So it's actually been good to be over here and just get a look at everyone, and if you end up, you know, being in and around the test squad, and then so you sort of get have a good idea of what you might come up against come our summer.
Just get a bit of a look at what Devin Conway's been up to, and I think you'll be fine, left-hander at the top of the order. I think you'll be okay, Marcus. So great to see you back in the runs, making plenty of them, and Whitey will not stop smiling because he thinks he's responsible for all of it. But long may it continue. We'll certainly be keeping abreast of the situation, mate. Good luck.
Thank you. Cheers, guys.
All the best to Marcus Harris from Leicestershire.
So just on that Lords test match, New Zealand ended up being all bowled out for 378. In reply, England 2 for 111. They lost two early wickets before Root and Burns kind of settled things down. Burns on 59, Root on 42. You mentioned Devin Conway half. On debut, on test debut, he was eventually run out for exactly 200.
What a disaster. Could have carried his bat.
Yeah,
he could have.
Last man out he was.
Last man out.
Run out, last man out.
He and Wagner had put on around about 40 for that last wicket. And Conway, I think he's the second player in Test history to score a debut double century opening the batting. I think he's only the second.
Not a bad place to do it either, at the home of cricket. But as Marcus Harris was saying there, a fairly friendly wicket, and the England side didn't have a recognised spinner. So they're bowling pace all day, up and down all day. Joe Root bowled a few overs. But not anywhere near enough. 12 overs he bowled and 100 and however many it was, 122.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that because they were criticising, just on the coverage, they were criticising selection before the game had even started that they didn't play the spinner. But it was interesting to see the England pace attack because Jofra Archer isn't playing at the moment, but they've still got so much depth in that part of their game at the moment. Their batting still, I think, is a little bit brittle, and that's going to be their problem coming out here. But from a bowling perspective, yeah, they're pretty strong, obviously.
Well, Anderson and Broad are still the new ball bowlers.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they'll rotate through.
It feels
through,
like they've been doing that for 35 years.
Well, they
years.
Have. Anderson could go to number three on the all-time list during this test match.
He's been bowling a lot. He got two for the 83. Ollie Robinson, I don't know much about Ollie. He was on debut, in fact, was he? Was that him? Is that one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He got four for 75.
Jeez, he had a big couple of days.
Yeah, he's had a... massive couple of days.
Yes, he's had some challenges. And then Mark Wood got 3 for 81. Bowling at an over where he averaged 150.5 or something.
Yeah, it's pretty quick.
Which is the fastest registered English over since records have been kept.
Yeah, since 2006 when they'd been keeping all those records. And it was really interesting watching it because Conway kind of struggled a little bit because he got a really good eye, but a couple of short ones he sort of hit Conway and that. And then Williamson was facing him during that spell, and he was facing him like he was bowling 65 kilometres an hour, like he was just playing him so comfortably. But, I mean, when you're talking about that sort of speed, really, in world cricket, only he and Mitchell Starc have that kind of capability to bowl at that speed repeatedly. Like, so occasionally you'll get the bowler bowling one sort of low 150s, but to average over 151 in an over, that's seriously quick.
Mm. That is quick.
Just doesn't happen very often anymore.
Raymond, we've come across some news today in regards to the World Cup qualifiers from the Socceroos. It's actually a busy period for the Matildas and for the Socceroos, this next little window. And the Aussie men are in action at the moment against Kuwait in round number two, the continuation of round number two of the World Cup qualifiers. And we're 67 minutes in, and we've just scored again, Raymond. We're 3-0
up. 3-0 up now.
3-0 up. Lecky, Irvine and Hrustic are the scorers. Lecky in the first minute. That's a nice way to start away on the road. It's a way to shut the locals up.
You know what that is, Daniel? It's scoreboard pressure.
So that was a good start. Irvine on the 24th minute, and then just then, as I reset the page, Hrustic got the job done. So 3-0 up over Kuwait in Kuwait City. So that is a good way to keep the locals at bay.
Terrific. I don't think in the paper over the last couple of days I've read one thing about this game. Usually you sort of know when they're on at least, but I was just looking through the ESPN website then, and I said to half, oh, you realise they're playing? And he sort of looked at me funny as well.
I did.
So
I knew there was a window coming up,
yeah.
Where they're all in action, the Socceroos and the Matildas. But as you say, not a lot of coverage, and it continues to go back to the point Whitey keeps on making about this, that they don't really let us in.
No.
So I think people have just stopped covering it.
Yep.
It's almost one of those situations. Until we get to the World Cup, if we get there, are we in yet? We call for it?
No,
that's what we're doing at the moment. Yeah.
Yeah, but this is the problem. They continue to talk about soccer as the sleeping giant in this country with participation, but there's a World Cup qualifier going on and we don't know anything about it.
Well, I mean, it was the sleeping giant back when Harry Kuehl and Mark Viduka and
Golden Generation.
Lucas Neal and these Mark Schwarzer were playing because people knew who they were.
Mm.
I would challenge anyone who is a passive soccer fan to name at least half the Australian team at the moment. It's not an easy thing to do. And the reality is the best players play all over the world. I kind of get that. But I still believe that there is a responsibility of the FFA to make sure that the Australian players are household names in this country.
Well, that's what I was going to get at. Who is the household name of Australian soccer at the moment?
Just going through the roster.
Well, that's a simple answer.
The only one at the moment is Matt Ryan.
And he's a goalkeeper.
No.
It's a simple answer. Sam Kerr is the household name of Australia.
Yes,
is of Australian soccer.
Yeah, okay. Overall, yep.
Yeah.
Well, Matt Ryan's probably the male one, and Sam Kerr would be the female one.
It says on the SMS, the sleeping giant is well rested. Well, the sleeping giant really is. To be honest, the sleeping giant is Han Solo in The Empire Strikes Back, and he's in carbonite, and he's just been frozen.
He goes to some weird areas.
I watched that movie this week as part of lockdown with the kids.
It wasn't really sleeping, though. He sort of put into hibernation, wasn't he?
Hibernation, that's right. He was.
Yeah. It wasn't his choice.
No,
the carbonite wasn't his choice.
When you were watching that, did you go into hibernation yourself on the couch?
No, because they had to keep answering all these questions from the kids trying to work out what was happening. And
So you're into Star Wars.
A very long couple of hours.
You're into Star Wars at the moment.
Well, yeah.
Have you gone down the Marvel path yet?
No.
You wait till you get to that path.
Mm.
Yeah, no, that'll come.
It's coming.
That'll definitely come.
Well, they can have that all to themselves.
It's around the corner. So just backing over that Ash Barty news, just in case our listeners have just joined us. So great to have you with us on a Friday morning. Just by the way, Dino, not too far away. The Oily Mail, Boomer as well. The Ash Barty news overnight, Whitey, because she always is the great white hope in Australian tennis because she's the number one player on the planet in the women's draw. But she's out of the French Open, pulled out midway through the match last night.
Yeah, so
what was her problem again?
Hip injury.
Right.
Hip injury that she sustained before the tournament started. She's had problems with her arm as well. And the shame is, and I mentioned this before, the shame is obviously she's the defending champion, number one player in the world. Sorry, she's not the defending champion. She's won the French Open a couple of years ago, a number one player in the world. She's also had a fair bit of success on the clay this year, to about 3 weeks ago until the injury started to be a bit of an issue. But then sort of rolling forward with Wimbledon so quick after the French Open, that would have to put her in some sort of doubt for that as well.
Didn't they bring the French Open forward a week?
No, they pushed it back a week. Yeah. So that even makes the gap between the French Open and Wimbledon even less.
You imagine a cortisone injection in the hip, probably to try to settle things down and play Wimbledon?
Well, that's what
you'd imagine.
Yep. I think that would be a fair assessment of the situation if you are keen to get up.
She obviously can get on the court, so how can they settle it down for as long as possible now, almost put it to sleep?
Yep.
To go the carbonite sort of...
No, I'm not sure you want to go the carbonite situation just at the moment, but we'll see where it all ends up. Raymond, there's some feedback coming through for... You're talking about the NAB League boys playing this week.
Mm-hmm.
No senior local footy in the country regions, just junior sport.
Okay.
So they're up in arms about that in the regions. And there's also a call today in the paper from regional councils and tourism groups calling for the Queen's birthday public holiday to be pushed back so that Melburnians can actually get out and spend some cash in those regions, which I think makes a bit of sense, I must admit.
Sort of the way Dan Andrews, we're just slowly going to reopen again. Just slowly reopen.
Well, we can slowly reopen as much as we like, but I think there's merit to this case.
No doubt.
That we pushed the actual holiday.
Yeah.
Because it's not the Queen's birthday anyway. Mm. Let's be honest, she was a while ago.
Yeah.
Elizabeth was celebrating another time. She doesn't celebrate on the Monday.
Well, she might. She might have a little cup of tea.
She might have a cup of tea, but not necessarily a celebratory
a little
cup
Vicky.
Of tea. Well, I think she's a Scotch finger sort
Scotch
of
finger, you think?
I think she is.
Yeah. Would she have the chocolate dip Scotch fingers? Or would
I would
she
hope so.
I reckon she'd be very traditional.
Maybe for her birthday she has the chocolate
mix it up.
Choc dip stuff.
She might go Monte Carlo, but I don't think she'd have the sort of the chocolate stuff. Shortbread cream, that's the sort of option, I reckon.
Would she dip the biscuit into the tea or something? No
chance.
She got someone else to do it for her.
She's got fine china.
Oh, that's what I'm asking.
She's got fine china. She wouldn't want to sort of damage the edge
fine
of the cup.
Okay.
There's sort of some,
Well, you can't
great.
You're not damaging a cup with a...
Well, you might just be unforced error sort of just...
But it's fine china. You're not really going to damage it with a Scotch finger. Just going for the dip.
Well, I'd go in really aggressive.
Speaking of baggy greens and good hands, Marcus Harris has got one of them and has a set of them. And he's the Australian opening batsman. And I'll tell you what, since he spoke to us last time, there's been an unbelievable turnaround.
Two first-class centuries.
A spike.
In form with his first-class cricket over for Leicestershire in the county cricket system. He joins us on The Breakfast Club. Good morning, Marcus.
Morning. How are you?
We're well, mate. You're going well. If you don't know, Whitey has been telling the whole world that he's responsible for your turnaround in form. Is there any truth to that?
Yeah, I can let him claim that. I'm not sure what he's done, but he can claim it.
Oh, come on. We talked, You've done well, though. Like, in all seriousness, two centuries in about three games, but batting at number three.
Yeah, it's been good. I think the good thing about county cricket is you play so much cricket. So I know this time last week we'd sort of come off the back of a tough game down in Southampton where we literally only played 80 overs for the game, but nearly got bowled out a couple of times, so that was a good challenge. But, you know, we've been able to play a few more games now. So, yeah, it's been good to spend some time in the middle.
So Marcus, why number three? Obviously, we look at the Australian test team at the moment and looking where the opportunity sits with you. Number three probably isn't the position. So why are we batting at number three at the moment?
It literally only happened because when I got over here, the Leicester boys had a game at Surrey and the two boys that opened the batting that game both made 100. So I said to the coach, he asked me where I wanted to bat and I said, I don't really care. So if you want those two guys to keep batting the batting, I'm more than happy to bat at three. So that's literally the only reason.
So does your attitude, does your technique, does your mindset change batting at number three rather than opening?
Oh, well, I think...
the good thing is, like, if you bowl a team out, you don't have to charge off the ground and whack your pads on, like, in a frantic rush like you would if you're opening the batting, and gives yourself just a little bit of time. So I've enjoyed that aspect of it. But to be fair, I've batted three, besides the first game, I've batted three every game. I've been in early anyway, so it hasn't really been too different to opening the batting. But like I've said to in a few things, I'm not that fussed now. As I get older, I'm more than happy to bat three or open. I'm just do whatever.
See, I've just actually realised you just made another 100 overnight. That's three.
Yeah, I got 100 today. Yeah,
148.
Mm. Yeah,
going all right.
That's three in a month. Is that now? Whitey clearly is an inspiration to you, and we understand all that. But is it just more time over there and just being a bit more comfortable in the conditions and the environment that leads to this sort of stuff? Or you just seeing them like beach balls?
I think it's just getting a bit more used to the conditions. The wickets are very different here. I wouldn't say they're doctored, but the home teams definitely favour the wickets into how they want them. So, like, for example, say there was two big sand pits on a good length for a spinner. So but that's our home ground. So that's just the way you've got to work out a way how to combat that. And then, you know, a couple of weeks ago down in Southampton against Hampshire, they had Kyle Abbott and Muhammad Abbas. So that thing had branches on it. So that's where it's just always different conditions. And, you know, that's what's been good. And that's why I wanted to come and play county cricket, is because you get to play in different conditions and get used to different wickets. Like our wicket at Grace Road generally stays quite low, but can be a bit up and down. So it can be challenging to bat on until you sort of get used to the wicket a little bit. So it's been good to just experience, you know, different conditions and different, like, the climate's very different here, obviously. So, and that can make a big difference in just how the game plays out, if it's sunny or if it's cloudy. So it's been fun.
And does that make it a bit more palatable and a bit easier to go through day-to-day when you are the international pro and you are making runs? A bit less stressful?
Yeah, it's funny how cricket can change quickly. Like, I made that 100 against Surrey a couple of weeks ago, but then we had pretty much a game and a half washed out, and I hadn't really had too much of a hit, and I was going, oh, you know, like, I'm getting towards my fifth and sixth game. I haven't really done as much as what I'd like to, but then in my last two innings have been good, so you can turn around quite quickly. And yeah, as the overseas, you obviously have that bit of pressure on you to do well and to, you know, try and win, at least win a couple of games for the team. So it was good to do that on Sunday.
Tomorrow, it's VRC Members Day, so every race is named after a VRC member, including this one here, by a man by the name of Otto Kohn, K-O-H-N. Mm-hmm. He is 93 years of age and has been a full member for 52 years. That's not a bad effort.
That's a strong, strong allegiance to the Victorian Racing Club there from Otto. Well, he's in the quaddie, so we'll get to Otto.
Yeah.
He's the last leg of the quaddie, Otto. I'm not even sure they've put him last.
Well, that's what I was thinking. He should be the feature event on the card.
Maybe it's the crescendo.
Yeah, maybe.
With the great man, Otto. We'll get to him. But we start with race six. He's race nine. We'll start with race six, which is the 1,400-metre affair. The VRC member, Brian Lindsay,
he's
handicap.
80, he's 84 years of age.
Is he?
He's been a full VRC member for 42 years.
How do you know this stuff?
Wealth of information.
Well, no, good luck to you, Brian. Hope it goes well for you.
He was a member of Queensland Parliament.
Okay.
Sorry, what?
Okay.
He was a member of Queensland Parliament, was Brian Lindsay.
Sort of J.B. Ockie Peterson sort of areas. Well, no. Anyway, he's got a race named after him tomorrow. It's race six. It's the first leg of the quaddie.
He's actually a Vietnam veteran.
And he's got 16 runners going around in his race. And if we go midway through the field, Dino, way to go, Paula. Not way to go, Brian, for his performance at the BRC. Way to go, Paula, his favourite, for Phil Stokes. And Jamie Carr's in the saddle at $4 at tab.com.au. Do you agree?
I do agree, Daniel. I think way to go, Paula, with the Rosemont Gatecrasher colours aboard.
Yes.
I think we'll be very hard to beat. First two runs this time in excellent, just had no luck at all in Adelaide. It was a total forgive run, and I think back to 1,400 metres. I think the fillies are the right form in this race, and I think she's maybe the best of them. Number seven, Standoff, is a filly that just seems to reserve her best form for Flemington, which is a good place to do it. She's won twice, and she was really dominant winning last start. She does go up a bit in weight, but gets Damien Oliver in the saddle. 12, Foxy Frida, I thought was quite a good run last start. And what I think was a really strong race at Sandown. I think that form will stack up well and that can run well here. They're the three fillies. Best of the Males, 5, Michigan, freshened up, but should get a lovely run here. And I think he's quite a promising horse. And the top one, Mark of the Man, there was a race recently at Flemington, won by Summer Rocker. There wasn't much between about the first 7. I just thought Mark of the Man might have been the one with the most improvement. Only second run in Australia at that most recent run. He'll be fitter again and has some chance. But no, I think it's a good race for the fillies. In saying that, not a lot between them.
What do you say, Quinny?
Best backed runner is the second elect number 10, Four Leaf Ride, who's been $8.50 into $5, won by 8 lengths on debut at Kilmore, not in the quaddy. What's the little concern here, Dino?
He won a time trial at Kilmore. He's in a race tomorrow. He just rolled to the front and did his own thing. And yes, he ran fast and he did it very well, but I just could see, you know, maybe a horse like Bengal Bandit or Volator or Summer Rocker or Japery just putting a little bit more pressure, just breathing down his neck a bit more. If he comes through that pressure and wins tomorrow, he's well above average.
Are you surprised to see he's been the best backed, or was it sort of the trick you're expecting some punters to fall into on the back of that, you know, impressive victory in terms of lengths?
Well, time-wise and lengths and margins, it's a very impressive win. But going in, it looked a weak maiden that day, and he got it on his own terms, hence he ran the time. And so much different when you've just got one, you know, sitting right on your tail and putting a bit more pressure in. So it'll be interesting to see how he copes with that tomorrow.
The other one that's firmed up, Daniel, has been the favourite. Way to go, Paul, who's been 480 into 4.
All right, so the Brian Lindsay handicap over the 1,400 metres, the first event has been done in terms of numbers, Ramo. Your job is to read us those numbers once they've been told by Dino and assessed by Quinny. What are they, please, for the first look at the quaddy tomorrow?
8, 7, 12, 5 and 1.
8, 7, 12, 5 and 1. The second leg is over the 2,000 metres. It is the Maureen Salter. The VRC member Maureen Salter. The time-honoured Maureen Salter, if you don't mind. Another full field going around. Big fields tomorrow, Dino. Tough day at the office, I reckon. 16 going around. Plenty of emergencies just in case. And Cindy Olsen's got the favourite with Craig Newitt in the saddle. Number 3, Ruba, who is $3.90 at tab.com.au.
He's certainly been a constant in these races, Ruba, and he does deserve a win at this level, and he's one of the chances. But I'm going with a horse on the way up, I think, in his preparation, and that's Namakwa, number 4, who won last start in lesser company. He drops 5.5 kilos for that win. He gets blinkers first time and a good draw, and just, you know, the stats are remarkable. 2,000 metres and beyond with the Mar Eustace stable. Yeah, they're good trainers of anything, but they really come into their own with these sort of horses and the way they prep them up. And I'm going to go with Namakwa to beat number 9, Mark Holt, who I thought just got too far back last start, but ran very well. Gets a senior rider in Michael D on tomorrow, can run well. Our lone star was near on 4 weeks between runs last start, and I think he'll just be better for that day at the races and that run at 2,000 metres. He'll run well. As I said, Ruba's a constant, and he goes in the quaddy, as does Redwood Shadow, who just tinkered with the gear a little bit here. The blinkers going off, Jamie Carr going on, maybe next best. But no, I think Namakwa might be a bit of a horse on the up here.
What do you got for us, Quinny?
$11 at the moment.
$11?
So no doubt that will be popular in the next couple of minutes after being tipped on top by Dino. The money has come for the favourite, Rhubarb. 440 out to 460, but subsequently 460 into 390. Redwood Shadow of 460, second elect. Then we've got Mark Holt at 5. Dino, are you surprised that Rhubarb is as short as 390?
Look, he's been very consistent, but yeah, you've got to think he's more of a $5 chance because he's an each-way chance. He is going to win one of these races, but with every run, he gets further into a preparation, and you just wonder where, you know, the tipping point is for his campaign. Saying that, he's kept his form, you know, really good, but yeah, he has surprised me he's that short.
Dino, the first emergency arms giver, part owned by some superstars at RSN, Matt Nevitt and Michael Falgate, and the horse has been somewhat costly, pipped twice the odds on favourite.
Anyone else involved, yeah. Nicholas?
They're the only superstars at RSN.
Anyone else involved?
Anyone from the tab involved?
I've got a tiny share as well. It's caused me to colour my hair. It's caused the stress so far. Should this horse sneak into the field, Dino, can he be included in the multiples?
He can be included in the place multiples. I think he's very much a learner. I think I think you've got a talent. But I think he's, you know, if, whatever he does at the moment, he's only going to get better. So, you know, I think it's good times ahead, Nicholas. Whether it's tomorrow, I'm not sure, but he's a promising horse.
Sounds like he no chance tomorrow.
Chris. Should he fail to gain a start tomorrow, keep an eye on him at Swan Hill next Sunday.
Ooh. Next Sunday?
Now, that yes. would be a good race for him.
1,600.
Yeah, 2 and 3 year old maiden.
Over the jumps?
Dino, do you know that it's a 2 and 3 year old maiden already for next Sunday at Swan Hill for that race?
Or do you, yes, Daniel.
Yeah. You know the form a week in advance.
Oh, I know that program because I've been going to Swan Hill for about 25 years, so I know what races are on their feature day.
Wouldn't you love to know 10% of what Dino's forgotten?
Oh, man.
Although he doesn't forget anything, so.
That's extraordinary. That is quite remarkable. Righto, so they're the numbers on the assessment of race number 7 and the second leg of the quaddie, the time-honoured Maureen Salter over the 2,000 metres. What are those numbers again, please, Rammer?
4, 9, 2, 3, and 5.
I'm still getting over the fact he knows what's happening at Swan Hill next Sunday. That's quite extraordinary. Race number 8.
Really, Daniel.
I understand. Race number 8 is the third leg of the quaddie, the William Keppel handicap over the 1,100. Almost all the way back on that famous Flemington straight. Almost all the way back. Not quite. So we've got 15 going around. No, we're not. We've got 2 scratchings. We've got 13 going around. You can rule a line through number 8 for Johnny McArdle, Archer Peter Beach, and the Waterman for the McAvoys. They've both been scratched. 13, that means. And a fairly open affair, Dino, because Sugartown, number 14 for DT O'Brien, D Lane in the saddle, is 5.50 favourite at tab.com.au.
Yeah, the scratchings didn't help much, Daniel. It's a really tough race. In saying that, I've landed on the favourite, Sugartown. I think she was in a race last week that looked winnable, and they've elected to come to this race, which looks a bit stronger, but down the straight probably gives her experience before the Creswick final here in a couple of weeks' time for the three-year-old. So I think she'll run very well, Sugartown. By no means is she a good thing. It's a very open race. I think the interesting thing of this race is the speed's all drawn out wide, and I just wonder how strong that speed is. I think with about 200 to go, they might be starting to paddle, and you know, it might be a bit different to some straight races. The horses close to the inside might have the momentum, and she might be one of them. Others that are drawn, you know, closer to the inside of 5 Curran, who just doesn't know how to run a bad race. He won well 2 starts back. He was beaten by Ayrton last start. He's been freshened up. He'll run well. All of Brighton's drawn barrier 1, which is not usually ideal at Flemington, but I just think the way this race sets up might be hitting the line strongly. 6 Pioneer River resumes as a gelding. He looks the best weighted horse in the race off his form last time in. He's trialled well. And Muntasira, conversely, she should have won last week against older horses back to her own age group. She goes up 10 kilos. It's a big impost on a 7-day backup. I put her in because she's a classy runner for this grade, but it is a challenge with the big weight.
I'm just going back to the selections for race number 7 too, Quinny. Did you put an emergency in your numbers in the paper?
Oh, absolutely I did. Because if I left the horse out of the top 4 and at 1, I would never, ever, ever, ever hear the end of it.
Put an emergency that you own in your numbers in the paper. That is disgraceful.
Also put Dino's top selection in there as well, which you'll be thrilled about.
Yes, you did. Well, I'm not sure he's that thrilled. That you've put it in.
Tickled pink he will be.
What about the market for race number 8? You've heard Dino's assessment. What's the Tabs assessment?
Sugartown heads the market at 5.50. All of Brighton's been popular, 7.50 into 6.50. And the best backed runner is one we don't have in the quaddie here, number 3, Yulong Command, who's been $11 in to 6.50. Dino, I want to ask you about 2 runners here. Yulong Command, who's had good support and chased home Ayrton last start, and a horse with Albury form that also ties through Yulong Command in number 4, Brenly's Trooper, who's won 3 from 4, and the only time this horse was defeated was second to the runner in question, Yulong Command, at the Valley.
Yeah, that's the key. Yulong Command, bit of a challenge this time, and look, they've worked him out. He's just a very fast, one-pace sort of horse. He gets to the front, and he's just got to try and hang on. Now, he went very quickly when he ran second 2 starts back. He did it again last time and weakened. Back to 1,100, blinkers on, down the straight. I just don't know if the straight's actually ideal for him. I think what he's missing is what you said about his win last time. I mean, he won at Moonee Valley. I think he'd like to be getting around the tight track at the Valley. And at the moment, of course, we don't race at the Valley, so he's a bit disadvantaged. Brenlin's Trooper is a promising horse. He has got just raw talent, and that's the thing. If he converts that tomorrow against these horses, he could win. I just wonder if an experience down the straight will do him good and he'll be better for this run down the straight.
Fair enough. Good assessment. Good assessment. Before we get to Rama's numbers, Whitey, we didn't get the background, the backstory of Maureen Salter or William Capel. Can you help us out there, please? Because we learnt that Brian Lindsay was a member of Queensland Parliament and has been a member for donkey's years as well.
And a Vietnam veteran.
And a Vietnam veteran, of course. What about Maureen?
Well, Maureen, interestingly about Maureen, she was among one of the first female VRC full members.
Right.
From back in the mid-80s. So that's a bit on Maureen. William?
Mid-80s, a bit archaic from the VRC, wasn't it?
Yeah, I know. Have a look at that. William Capel, VRC member for over 30 years.
That's all they give you.
Well, I mentioned... I feel like I'm being a bit disrespectful to Maureen and William, but so Otto and Brian, they had great stories to tell.
Righto. Well, that's what's happening there for Maureen and Brian.
Oh, Leslie Milson is...
from Naked Gun.
Naked Gun. No,
Leslie Milson's a good family friend of ours. Leslie Milson.
No, not involved in the quaddie, so no feedback for the moment. Just trust me, there'll be a moment.
They won't.
There will be a moment. Shush. Cup. Shush.
Okay, sorry.
There will be a moment for Leslie. Sorry. I can tell you. I know some information. I don't want to go too early on these things. It's a carryover champ situation. Rama, what are the numbers, please, for the third leg of the quaddie?
Third leg. 14, 5, 2, 6, and 1.
Race number 9 is the last leg of the quaddie, in fact. And this is the VRC member Otto Cohn race over the 2,000 metres, the benchmark 84 affair. Just for those playing at home again, Whitey, what is Otto renowned for at the VRC?
Jeez. For being a long-term member. He's 93 years of age,
right,
still watches the races every weekend, backs the Ramaruffi every week.
Loves it.
He's been a full member for 52 years.
Good on you, Otto. Good on you. Nice recognition for you tomorrow to finish off the quaddie to land us the big dividend tomorrow. And there are 16 going around, Dino. Number 17, Lamborghini, gets a run for Paddy Payne after Mubariz has been scratched for CJ Waller. But it still gives us a full field of 16. And XL Man for Richard Lemming, which we know plenty about around here on the Breakfast Club. And Jamie Carr in the saddle, his favourite, $4, tab.com.au.
Yeah, and he's one of the chances, Daniel. Another, the recurring theme of the day, very even race. But I love the way number 16, Luna Flair's come back to racing. Both of her runs this time in have been really good, and I'm just hoping late in the day they'll be steaming down the outside, and she fits that bill perfectly, and I think she's got a great winning chance, number 16, to beat 9, Maserati Bay, who he's really improved this time in. He's got a useful record all round. He's won 5 of 15, but, better over a bit further this time in over shorter trips. His two runs have been excellent. He's got a great chance. Number 10, fifth position, had its first run in Australia for the Price Kent Junior Stable at the Warrnambool Carnival and ran well. I think out to 2,000 metres will suit him. 5, Approach Discreet. This horse is in tremendous form. He's better on softer ground, but he's just going so well. He's got to be a chance. And 13, Excel Man goes in the quaddie. So it's just a meeting of some really in-form horses here, and hence it makes it a really tough race.
Righto, Quinny. In-form horses. We've been able to narrow it down to 5 from Dino. What's the market doing?
Two early firmers at the pointy end of the market. Excelman's been $4.80 into 4, and fifth position $7 into $5.50. Dino's on top selection, Luna Flair, currently at $6 on the fixed odds. Maserati Bay, a $10 chance. Dino, we know we can't put them all in, but what did you make of number 12, Vegas Knight, who returned to prominence with a nice Flemington win last start?
Yeah, he got the job done, and he'll be on pace, and it was a good day to be on pace, and he was very brave last start. I just think it'll probably depend on how the track's playing. If the leaders or on paces are doing well, well, he's got a lot better chance than probably a couple of others I'm tipping, but I'm just hoping they'll be winding up and running on down the centre later in the day.
And Luna Flair, $4.60 out to $6. Do you advise your legion of fans to keep your powder dry and hopefully you'll get better than the $6 currently on offer?
I wouldn't think you'll get better. I think that's about... I think she's hit her mark. I think she was a little bit unders early, so that's fine. That's about where she should sit because betting this far out, knowing where she's going to be, she's going to be in the back 3 or 4, you're just hoping that they can run on the day.
Rightio. So that is the assessment of the Otto Cohn last race of the card, the last race of the quaddie, and they're the numbers we need, Rammer, to land the big one tomorrow. What are they again, please?
16, 9, 10, 5, and 13.
16, 9, 10, 5, and 13. You know, you're not going to believe this. There's been some feedback coming through. Missed the quaddie numbers as I was yelling at my sister Kylie for never inviting me to hang out with Half. Can you please repeat them, says Danny Minogue. Well, Danny, great SMS. Great to have you listening this morning. This one, Half and Lads, sorry, I was brushing my pet hen, Mr. Cluckachungus, and missed the quad numbers. Can you please divulge? Well, with manners like that, we can absolutely do that. And then this one gets me as well. This is from Peter. Half, can Rammer please repeat the numbers? I've just woke up after being comatose from Whitey's Rock Out Choice yesterday. Now, I can't have you being comatose, Pete. I can't have you missing numbers because of that. So I'm going to get Rammer to go through the numbers, please, tomorrow again for the quaddie.
Race 6, 8, 7, 12, 5, and 1. Race 7, 4, 9, 2, 3, and 5. Race 8, 14, 5, 2, 6, and 1. Race 9, 16, 9, 10, 5, and 13.
All right, there are your numbers for the quaddie tomorrow at Flemington. A good chance to get in early doors, but make sure your pencils are even more sharpened tomorrow morning on RSN 927. Let's get to the formula bet, Dino. Who are you playing for today, and where are you going?
We're playing for Jesse McLean of Alfredton. For Jesse, a $40 all-up bet, the win at race 2, number 2, Lavina. $40 a win at race 3, number 12, Chief Eltony. He's the best bet of the day. And $40 on the all-up of the pair. Race 2, number 2, into race 3, number 12, for Jesse McLean of Alfredton.
All right, so 2-2, 3-12, with 3-12 being the best of the day. Quinny, what does that come to, please, for Jesse?
$3.50 into 2.25. The all-up comes to $7.87.
$7.87 for the all-up for the formula bet tomorrow. Good luck to you, Jesse. Hope it goes well. Nice work. Okay, so race 3, number 12, is the best bet of the day. Whitey, race 2 is the Ben Edney.
Yeah.
What's Ben's situation?
Ben's been a member for 27 years. Had a horse called Princess Tahir, who was trained by Leon Corstens and ran in the Oaks in 2001.
Righto. And the race number 3 is the Leslie Milson.
This is the good one, Leslie Milson. Now, Leslie.
Not Leslie Nielsen for those listening.
Milson. Milson, Leslie Milson. M-I-L-L. Now, Leslie Milson's late husband was Monty Milson. Yes. Now, Monty Milson helped found TROA, the Thoroughbred Racehorse Owners Association. But maybe more importantly, Monty and Leslie were owners of Taxan, who won the 1978 Caulfield Cup under what was pretty controversial circumstances, Dino. Because it was a very close finish with Arwon, wasn't it?
It was a very close photo, very deceptive photo, and Taxan got the day. And yes, the Milsons didn't race, that horse didn't race in their colours, but they had very famous blue and white striped colours and icons of the Victorian racing.
That's right, and the colours were that way because they're massive North Melbourne fans, a big North Melbourne family, the Milsons. And when I was growing up, we used to go over to the Milsons quite a bit with because I was good friends with Scott and Dean, their kids. We used to play indoor sport, indoor footy, table tennis, and we would play for the Caulfield Cup. Play for the Caulfield Cup, and whoever won, we'd take the Caulfield Cup off the mantelpiece and have it above our head like we'd won Wimbledon, the actual Caulfield Cup.
I liked it, Whitey.
I did as well.
That's a cool story.
Yeah, I think it is a good story.
That's a cool story.
It was the actual Caulfield Cup.
But you had to give it back.
We had to give it back.
No, that's disappointing.
I don't know whether Leslie would have been too happy if she knew what we're doing with the Caulfield Cup. It was the actual Caulfield Cup.
What else were you doing with it?
Well, no, we were
putting it over your head.
Sort of, you know, playing.
Was there some shenanigans with
the cup? Put beer in the cup, or?
We're about 8, maybe 7.
It's about the right time.
Rammer, drink responsibly. Hydration's important. Righto, that's a good story from the Milsons.
Coming in near
the end. Yeah, so much. He'll mention the skating bowls shortly. There's a bit of activity there, too, I heard earlier this morning. That's a topic for another day, don't know. But boy, did he get up to some mischief, that fella.
Oh, wow.
And the skateball. Oh, Rammer, you sicko. Let's get to the Rammer Ruffy speaking of.
Ready to sting the bookies? This is Rammer's Ruffy for the all-new Kia Stinger. Fine-tuned for Australian conditions. Book a thrill ride and experience the new Kia Stinger today.
And we have stung the bookies for the Kia Stinger the last couple of weeks. Dino, what can we do tomorrow?
Let's hope so, Daniel. And it was this race last year, actually, that we got on a bit of a roll with Rammer's Ruffy, and it was a horse called Persan.
Oh,
and
yes.
we're going back to the same stable, same race, and it's race 7, number 4, Namaqua. I think at around that double figure quote, he'll run a tremendous race.
Right, those numbers again, please, Quinny.
11 the win, 320 the place.
Boomer, you've been courageous with that hamstring and recovering for the Kangaroos. And you get a bit of time because you've got the week off. What are the boys up to?
The boys have got a mini break at the minute. So they had Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday off to recoup. And I shouldn't say go away because they're not allowed to go away, but they'll be tucked up at home and no football. I'm sure they have to do some sort of exercise over the weekend, but it's a four-day mini break that most teams will have that have the bye. The coaches did a big review of the mid-season, so to speak, the last couple of days. So that's been a little bit of fun, going through some stats and different lines and seeing how they stack up against everybody else in the competition and where we can improve. There's a fair few areas we can improve in, but it's still exciting. You go through our list and we start getting some players back now. Actually, I think Robbie Tarrant will be back pretty soon. Jed Anderson. Jared Pollock. There's a couple of players that start coming back, which will add some experience to our team and certainly help out our young guys. So I think the second half of the year, if we can stay injury-free, will be a lot better and a little bit more exciting.
So the summary of David Noble's assessment of the first half of the season, what was the sort of the feedback?
Yeah, well, actually, all the lines presented to Nobe, so he'll go away now over the next four days and collate all that information and come back to us with a bit of an assessment. So I think that will happen on Monday. But the guys do a great job. I mean, the amount of work and hours they put in is unbelievable. So they had some good stuff. Like I said, the stats didn't stack up super well where we would like them. But we're just going to keep improving slightly. I think we all know that we're not going to win the premiership this year. So as long as we can be on the upward scale, so to speak, that's the most important thing. And they might be little gains, but they're still gains.
It's going to be tough from 1-10, but I think there's always a chance to be positive. Might not win the flag.
Football's a funny game.
It's a funny game. 1-10's not over just yet.
Mathematically, can we still make it?
Yeah, I think you can. 12-10 will probably get you in.
History says it's hard to win from 8.
Yeah.
12-10, you can. If you win 11 in a row, you're a chance. You're half
well,
a chance.
Well, you know what? Until that happens, I've got faith that we can make the finals.
This on the bye weekend itself, the fact that it's a three-week split shift, as has happened for the last couple of years, Boomer, do you like that concept, or would you prefer a whole industry weekend off?
I think the whole industry weekend off, that probably... When I was playing, I know that I thought that worked better. You can get away. There's no football for the whole weekend. Yes, it's a little bit. I know what the AFL are doing because they want to be on TV the whole time. So I understand that part of it. But I think it worked better when the whole weekend was free, and then you've got the whole 9 games the following week and the following week after that. So that's just what I would prefer as a player. But it is how it is now. And you know what? It's all different again. Who knows? I thought they were going to. I thought they would have made some teams play this week, not travel and have the bye a couple of weeks later just through the COVID situation. So the thing is, everyone's still on their, still on the edge. They don't know what's going to happen. So that's still interesting as well.
Now, you had the mid-season draft the other day, Boomer. You got the big man. The big man comes in, Jacob Walker.
Edwards.
Who's Jacob Walker? Yep. I know him too. Jacob Edwards, and now he's been talked about for a long time, well, certainly the last month or so, as a no-brainer for the Kangas to get in. Have you done any background on him? Do you know much about him apart from what they're telling you?
No, just what they're I haven't seen him. I've seen him play from the vision, but I haven't seen him play live. He's still completing year 12, so he's still pretty raw, and that will be a bit of a challenge for him now and a challenge for the football club, how much we get him versus how much... He'll have to be at school. So he looks really good, though. 202 centimetres. Looks like he can mark it. Beautiful set shot for goal. So it's a little bit raw, still very skinny. And once we put some weight on him at 202 centimetres, I'll tell you who he does move like. The vision that I've seen is Joey Danaher. That's exactly sort of what he looks like.
Joey Danaher. Yeah, good.
Yeah.
Good. If you missed his interview yesterday with the boys, rsn.net.au to hear him have a chat to Remmer and Whitey yesterday after the mid-season draft. So he's not going to play this year, is that what you're saying?
Oh, I wouldn't have thought. Oh, he might get some VFL games in. Yeah. I'm not too sure exactly how it's going to work. If he's any good and he dominates, who knows? He might play He might play one or two AFL games, but he's still, I think school football is still going to be a priority for him. And certainly school, completing his year 12 studies, is going to be a big factor for him. So I think they'll put that first, and footy, not secondary, but if you know what I mean, they've got to work around the schooling part of it. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting. And hopefully he turns out to be half the player that Joey is, and we've found ourselves a good player.
So, Rama, is that the design of the mid-season draft? I think North Melbourne's clearly done what they need to do, but the idea, I thought, of the mid-season draft was to be able to bring in players for the now, to sort of help particularly teams that have got injury issues, as opposed to potentially stockpiling for the future.
Yeah, well, probably. But again, like, you look at the Waffle and the Sandfall, they're sort of complaining about it. Well, you're taking our players mid-season, it's making it hard for us.
That'd be incredibly frustrating.
They get a financial payment for, I think they get $10,000 for every player that's taken for their club. But yeah, what was there? 6 ruckmen taken. So all those 6 ruckmen are going to sit on the club's list now for the next couple of years and develop.
There's one team in the SANFL last time they had the mid-season draft, which was 2 years ago, that 3 or 4 of their best players were taken. South Adelaide, I think, And they went, I mean, imagine taking 4 of your best performed players out of your team for the rest of the year.
Yeah, so I don't see any of those ruckmen playing from now until the end of the season.
Any?
Maybe the one from Carlton VFL. His name is
Murkoff. Alex Murkoff.
He might, but as Boomer's saying, like, Jacob Edwards needs to put on a stack of weight. He's only played, I think, 3 NAB League games total. So, you know, some of these other kids have played senior football already. So if I'm a North Melbourne supporter, I wouldn't be expecting him to play senior football. I think VFL football is possible.
So how does he get the attention, the attraction that he got if he's played such little football? Was it just one game that he just, like, it's quite remarkable.
It is quite remarkable.
So his first 2 intra-club games to the Sandringham Dragons, which was February...
So essentially trial games to get into an under-18 team.
He was out of this world good. And you look at the other ruckman from Sandringham that got drafted, Max Heath. So he's a good ruckman as well.
Yep.
So he was playing against good competition, obviously, but he was by far and away the clear standout in those games. And then he started the season. His first 3 NAB League games were very good. Very, very good.
Because when we spoke to him yesterday, Daniel, you could tell that he just couldn't believe what was happening to him. He's played 3 games of football, and all of a sudden he's been drafted to an AFL team.
Yeah,
so it's boys own stuff.
You got to remember on the back of that, Whitey was the COVID year last year as well.
Yeah.
So those young kids don't get to play football, and we're the guys that we drafted this year in Charlie Lazaro, Will Phillips, the guys from Melbourne hadn't played football at all. Now they got thrusted into an AFL system, and they're playing senior football on the back of 0 games last year. Like, it's quite bizarre when you actually think about the whole setup of the COVID situation, that these kids did not play a game in 2020 and they come in and they are AFL players at the start of 2021. And you will see the guys develop, because, I mean, Will Phillips is pick number 3. Tom Powell, he played over in the Sandfall.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
He played all his football last year. So you've got a better grounding straight away. So it's really weird, the situation that these guys can come in and play senior football on the back of 0 football last year, which is, for me, you think about it properly, it is quite bizarre.
But that if you sort of broaden that conversation out a little bit, that's what's making some of the performances of the first-year players that didn't play any football last year that are playing week in, week out
Nick
at AFL level. Yeah. I mean, he's one, but there's a couple of examples that it's quite remarkable that they're able to play as much as they have at the level they're playing.
And I think people will have some different thoughts around that in terms of, well, they're fresh. So they just come off no football, so they're fresh, they can play. But I don't agree with that. I think continuity in football and playing as many games as you can as a young kid is super beneficial.
It's your last year.
I know, I have heard that.
It's your last year of underage football, Boomer. So it's when you should be at sort of the peak of playing against your own age group to really prove that. And and you gain and build so much confidence in yourself and your own game playing against kids of your own age. So you know, they miss that opportunity. So you do see, you're right in what you're saying. I don't think Jamara Ugalhagen, we might not see him the whole year. And a lot of people go, well, he's the number one pick, but he's the number one pick. He wasn't going to the bottom team, and I know Haas mentioned this. He missed a year of football, and there's two already very good forwards at the Bulldogs. Mm. So you might not see him, which would be probably a first, where the number one pick doesn't play a game of senior football.
Oh, I think that'd be right. We'll see what happens with Jamara. He's not even on the plane. Is he to Perth?
Because, I mean, he's a key position forward. They obviously take a bit longer. Remember the pressure on Jack Watts? It was actually the Queen's birthday weekend where he made his debut, but there'd been pressure on, you know, when are they going to play him? You know, that took a while, but, you know, Jamara's going to be later than
Jack was still at high school.
Yeah.
And he was Brighton Grammar, I think, wasn't
he? Yep,
he
was. Righto. Well, Jack's not playing tonight. Now let's have a chat at tonight's game, the Friday night extravaganza at Giants Stadium. That's right, Giants Stadium for Melbourne and Brisbane. That's what's happening in this pandemic-challenged season at the moment for the AFL. Langdon is out for the Demons. That's a bit of a
got
blow.
Got concussed very late in the game last week.
Cost you 25, did it?
No, it cost me 20.
he's out for the D's. He's been a good player for them this year too, so that's a bit of a blow. No one... No ins. What's no? How can you have an?
Well, the medical sub.
Yeah,
who was sub. Tom Sparrow last week?
Yes, he'll probably roll in. Lester and Neil in for the Lions. Lucky Neil's won a Brownlow. You know he's pretty handy. Berry, the Barometer, Matheson and Madden Gowowski. Boomer, we saw the D's unbelievable in the last couple of weeks. Their performance over the Bulldogs was outstanding, but the Brisbane Lions have won 7 in a row. And this game at neutral territory, have you got any idea about how this plays out?
Yeah, before I do, though, I think Rammer might have been the only tipster that tipped Melbourne last week.
That is correct.
That's absolutely correct.
Yeah. I just want to say well done. I thought you were silly last week doing that. Well done, Adam.
My couple ahead now?
We'll try not to talk about it.
Yeah, put you a little bit more ahead. But, I agree with you, Huff. I think Langdon, who's had a super year out in the wing there, I think he's going to be a really important out for Melbourne. But last week, gee, they were good against the Bulldogs, weren't they? Their pressure was outstanding. I think they only had four or five less tackles than the Bulldogs, but it was the way they did their pressure. It was a front-on pressure. They made the Western Bulldogs go around them, and it's something I haven't seen before from Melbourne. I thought they were outstanding in that aspect. When they didn't have the ball in hand, that's when I thought they were nearly at their best. But they're scoring a lot in the last month. They got the most scores from centre bounces, so they're winning the ball at the source early on and getting the ball forward and giving themselves a great opportunity to score. So I think they're doing everything right. I must admit, they've probably surprised me a little bit, and they certainly surprised me last week. But what they do, they maintain possession with the ball in general play. They don't kick down the line very, very often. So they're maintaining possession of the football by hand and by foot, which is a great style to play if you've got the skills to execute that, and Melbourne clearly have. So that part of the game where we're not giving the ball back to the opposition is unbelievable. And as I mentioned, their pressure has been outstanding. On the other hand, Brisbane, you mentioned they've won the last 7 in a row. Last week when we spoke about Brisbane, I actually mentioned their tall forwards getting their hands on the football and kicking goals. Now they've got a bunch of midfielders who have shots on goals as well. We often see McCluggage, who doesn't kick a lot of goals, but he has a lot of shots on goal. He's scoring goals now. Zorko always has a shot on goal. And of course, we've seen Robinson have 30 and kick 4 last week. So they're starting to get a little bit of potency through hitting the scoreboard, not only through their tools now, but through their midfield as well, which I think is exactly how... I love goal-kicking midfielders, so I look at that and I think, yep, they've got the recipe to be a fantastic team. And the marks inside 50, they've got the tall timber now. 15-4 it was last week against the Giants. Marks inside 50, which is absolutely huge. Since round 5, they've been the highest scoring team. And we know, I think they... What were they before round 5? Were they 2-3 or something? They didn't have a great
start. They were.
They were
1-3. They must have been 2-3, yeah. Mm.
Yeah, 2-3. And since then, they've just gone bang, bang, bang. And it's there's a couple of stats that really stick out to me. But one of them is the highest scoring team since round 5, I should say. So I think it's going to be a ripper. If Melbourne bring what they brought last week against the Bulldogs with their pressure, And the way Brisbane are going, this is going to be not only match of the round, but nearly match of the season for me so far.
Well, they had the chance last week, the Dees, with the Dogs. That didn't turn out so well. Turned out to be a bit of a fizzer. The Lions get a chance to fight and look for that mantle as match of the season so far, Rammer. What do you see?
Well, so you look at the two team strengths at the moment. So Melbourne's strength, obviously, their defence, how they're setting themselves up. Now, we know the Lions' forward line has now come to life. So Danaher, Hipwood, McStay, Cameron, Link McCarthy are the five mainstays in that forward line. So then you go to the matchups of those players. Look, May and Lever, the way they're playing at the moment, the way May is setting up Lever to play, I think is really, really important. Harrison Petty comes in and plays that. He'll lock down on someone. He'll be a lockdown defender. But May will take a player but still be able to intercept. Lever probably is more in the intercept category. That's how he'll play tonight. I see that then, okay, who then plays on Charlie Cameron in that four line? Does Hibbard go straight to him? I expect that to happen. And then the other one is Melbourne's midfield more dynamic than Brisbane's midfield at the moment? Do you now have to start to go, well, Oliver's having an outstanding season. He's on par, if not better, than Petrarca in terms of the way he's going. Does Lions go head-to-head with Clayton Oliver in the midfield? Does Hugh McCluggage come into the midfield and try to push Petrarca? Because McCluggage is playing a lot more forward of the ball. Petrarca's not accountable. So they had Harms last week playing on Liberatore, but then Petrarca and Oliver were basically allowed to freewheel and go head-to-head with Bontempelli, McRae, Bailey Smith and the like. Does that happen again? Does I don't know if Chris Fagan will allow that type of freedom for Petrarca and Oliver as they had last week. So I see this game two ways. Can Brisbane shift May and Lever away from what they were able to do last week? Stand down the line. You know, okay, Bulldogs, if you want to kick the ball, if you want to go switch sideways, you want to move it like that, go for your life. Your strength this year has probably been you've been more direct. Can Brisbane still go direct and catch Melbourne's defenders napping at times? Give Danaher. Yeah, go, Boomer.
Can I just a really quick discussion around Lever. Who does he go to? Who do you see him go to tonight?
Probably McStay.
So do you think he can come off McStay and impact that third? We spoke about this last week against the Bulldogs, but the Brisbane Lions' three tools are nearly the best three tools in the competition to man up on, I'm talking about, at the minute, because they're so big.
So if I'm planning against Melbourne at the moment, whoever Lever is playing on, I keep trying to drag him back to goal.
You want to take him deep?
Yep.
You want to take him deep, or you want to take him skinny side to the boundary?
I want to take him
where
deep.
He can't come off.
No, I want to take him deep. I want to take him right on the goal line. So how that works then is that you've got to be pretty careful in terms of your matches. But I think half tonight, again, I like the Demons.
Demons for you. Whitey, who wins?
Melbourne. I was so taken by them last week. I think they'll win.
If it was at the Gabba, it might be different, but it's neutral territory.
Neutral territory. Boomer?
Oh, where's the game at? I thought it was
Giant Stadium, mate. Giant Stadium.
Oh, that changes the thing for me. I was Brisbane. I thought it was at the Gabba. I probably should have looked at that, but I'm going to stick with Brisbane. I'll go Brisbane. 16 points. There you go. Brisbane, I'll even give you a figure.
16 points. Tough to tip against the D's after what we saw last week. I'm with the D's as well. So that's Friday Night Footy done.
That was the best of the Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.